reading from the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhya Lila, Chapter 1. I gotta find the text here. Text 42. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya Dvaita Chanda Jaya Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Tanna Bratis Putra Nama Sri Jiva Gosani Yata Bhakti Granta Kaila Tare Antanai. Sri Rupa Goswami's nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami, has compiled so many books on devotional service that there is no counting them. Om Jnana Timuran Hasya Jnananjana Shilakaya Chakshurun Mulatam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Shayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapadantikam Adadanastinam Dante Idam Yache Puna Puna Srimad Rupa Padam Bhoja Dulisham Janma Janmani Vairagya Bhakti Risham Payatnai Apayam Mamanabhipsamandam Kripam Buhiya Paradhuka Dhuki Sanatanastam Prabhu Mastrayami Pancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhayevacha Patitanam Bhavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasade Ghor Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, greetings from New Jersey. I'm at the home of John Tarini and Jamuna. I came this morning from Rehoboth, Delaware. That's about 3 hours away. I always organize my schedule so I can stop someplace for the class. John is an engineer, and he's helped me in my service. He provided me with a car, which I travel around for preaching. And after the program here, I'll go to the Edison Center and I'll give the Sunday lecture there. I'm very interested in the science of speaking and lecturing on Krishna consciousness, and I can see so clearly that it's not just a question of one's knowledge. It very much depends on one's mode. He has to really cultivate goodness so that he can access that knowledge. And in fact, this whole section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita where Srila Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami is about to embark on this incredible, humongous task of explaining the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but not just the life and teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, but his Antya Lila, the most confidential aspects of his pastimes. And to not only explain that, but to do it in uncomparable poetry. And you can see, I think there's two things. One is the material mode of goodness, which gives one enlightenment. It's just like you may be in a room, if there's a light on, you can see things more distinctly. So in the same way, if you associate with the mode of goodness, you can see things that are there more clearly. So even if you have a frame of reference and knowledge, to actually access it, especially with this particular medium, which is passionate in itself, you really have to cultivate goodness. And I'm struggling with that, actually, because of the nature of this traveling. So on my three-hour journey here, I just chanted Hare Krishna the whole day, and the whole time, with both hands on the wheel. I just chanted and thought of the class because I realized to do this service. And even in terms of sadhana, actually, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur had, he actually talked about sadhana bhakti and sadhana kriya. He gave these terms, sadhana kriya, you do sadhana, and sadhana bhakti, you do it with bhakti. And you have to clean the heart. You have to do it with bhakti. Bhakti means that you see Krishna and you see yourself as a servant. And that takes chaito dharpanam marginam, the chaito, the consciousness, marginam. It has to be relatively clean, and then you feel that connection. And that's why when you actually do sadhana, you could see, when I'm doing a vow in India, and you know I'm chanting more than just 16 rounds, and you can actually feel it, that you're being purified, and you come to another point where you can actually, chanting becomes so much more easier because you're actually seeing the name as Krishna and seeing yourself as a devotee of Krishna in relationship to Krishna. So I'm actually kind of struggling with that. Probably some people who've been hearing me since I was in India, when I was just in one place for 6 months, and how easy it was for that regulation, that focus and cultivation, and just to keep up the standard. But I'm determined. I'm determined to do so. So the other thing about this class is that I'm teaching the same subject in both classes, unlike India, where I would do a different subject on Wednesday and a different subject on Sunday. So they're contiguous, so I kind of go back a little bit. Therefore, it's almost divided a little bit more into two groups, although there are quite a few people that are attending both lectures. So I'm trying to kind of coordinate all that. But so I may repeat some things that I spoke, let's say, on Wednesday, because it's needed to be repeated again for the people on Sunday. They were just coming once a week. But I really wanted to discuss this interesting point again that I discussed Wednesday. But I think if I discuss it again, it'll be even more clear. And the point was, is I was just talking about the holy name, and I described how I was with my godbrother Pradyumna, and he was giving a commentary on one should chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind, thinking oneself lower than the straw in the street, or as he translated, as a blade of grass. And when he was describing that, chanting in that mood, he was describing the nature of grass. And he described it very interesting that we're 1/10,000th the size of the tip of a hair, so we're not even as big as grass. And he described, I remember when he was describing to me the nature of grass, he was saying the anonymity of the grass. It's just one among many. Even a blade of grass, it's not even distinct. So then I spoke about that, and then he was describing, you know, this Trinadapi Kirtan, where one is serving the Kirtan, and he's not feeling individually distinct member, just one among many in the Kirtan, in that mood of humility and surrender, how one takes kirtan. So in the Sangha, I think I'm getting some very interesting feedback. And I've opened it up the last class also for questions. And I want to bring this up again. So one of the regular listeners, Madan Mohan, so he brought up the point, and he wanted to know, how do you reconcile? And this is such an interesting point. And those on the Sangha, I want you really to think about this yourself in your own life. How does one reconcile the anonymity, and I hope that word, the insignificance and the humility that's promoted as the ideal of Vaishnavism, with the obvious necessity for individuality and distinction. In other words, what does that mean? The like a blade of grass. What is that actually referring to? And because if this distinction is not reconciled in the proper way, then what you have in a perhaps an immature understanding in the name of, I hope I'm pronouncing the word properly, anonymity or insignificance, on the basis perhaps of that truth, you're artificially squelching people's individuality and their distinction. So how actually do you reconcile this? So what I'd like to do is, I've got to find something. Okay, I'm missing something that I'm looking for. Just one second. Give it to me. Okay, I got it. Because most of you are not on. So Madan Mohan, he brought up this point. And he also, it was very interesting he brought up this point, because he himself is a gardener. So he wanted to explore this question of what appears to be the contradictory need for anonymity, or I don't know if that's the right word. So after the class, someone to correct me. And the need for distinction, and how can they go side by side in the spiritual movement? And he was concerned that perhaps my example of being, or as I was explaining, that chanting is lower than a blade of grass and the non-distinction of the grass among the lawn, that perhaps it was, in a very polite way, he was bringing up the point, that perhaps it was... perhaps it could be understood, misunderstood, as Krishna consciousness being a process of almost merging or non-distinction. So let me read his letter again, and I think listen to it carefully, and then I'll read my answer, and then we'll try to reconcile it. And those of you listening also, think about that clearly. Because it was very attractive, the image of you're in kirtan. You're in kirtan, and you're not promoting yourself, but you're promoting the kirtan, and you're just a part of that kirtan. So he said, Dear Maharaj, I had some impulses on the topic of grass, as mentioned in yesterday's class. Those of you who are here on Wednesday, I'm sure you'd just like to hear the letter again, because it's quite an interesting letter. He said, grass is associated poetically with the quality of humility in the Shikshastaka. Where this takes my thoughts as a gardener may be quite different from where it takes the casual observer of grass. I appreciate Pradyumna's thoughts as you express them, though I'd like to further explore the implication that humility is somehow related to homogeneity. I'd lean away from the idea that humility implies blending in like a blade of grass in a lawn. To me, this conjures images of neutrality. It even sets off my alarm for impersonalism, non-distinction, non-variegation, oneness. And it also seems a bit cultish, as in American lawn care. It also describes only what the mundane human eye sees, not what God's eye sees. Presumably, he sees each blade's individuality, not just blobs of greenery. My own spiritual chlorophyll is stimulated more by the idea of humility being expressed through service, and service being characterized by offering our individuality in a flavorful manner. I do understand, though, that individuality and distinction are not ends in themselves, not the aims of service, just inevitable components of it. Variety is the spice of life, as the saying goes. And in this regard, I'd like to share a gardener's inside scoop on grass. The big news here is that there is amazing variety in the grass family. and many are far from humble in the ordinary sense. There are mainly highly utilitarian plants doing humble service to mankind in many ways. Food, grains or grasses. Shelter, thatching material, bamboo lumber, parentheses, basketry, musical instrument, etc. Yet they are certainly not all small, trodden underfoot creatures. Some grasses are even shade-giving giants, reaching sky with the height of 70 feet or more in the case of bamboo, which is grass. There is much variation in growth habit, coloring, flowering characteristics, etc. I have an encyclopedia of grasses which shows their amazing variety. Grasses are rather more dramatic components than, quote, humble ones when it comes to garden making. So to me, the humility of a blade of grass lies mostly in its honest, practical contribution to the whole, not its shy non-difference from its neighbor. A middle-class American will probably just think of grass as lawn grass, boring, homogeneous, impersonal, suburban, living carpet, good little botanical soldiers marching to the beat, mowed and apparent oneness. But a garden artist will see creative opportunity in the grass family and all its varieties and personalities. And the most treasured grasses for garden artists are those that exhibit some kind of rare, interesting, enhancing mutation, such as when a green blade exhibits some kind of white or yellow stripe known as variegation in this field. These mutations are sought by the connoisseur and fetch a collector's price. I prefer to think of Krishna as the connoisseur and devotees as the rare, variegated plants in his garden, serving, quote, humbly by displaying their individual beauty tastefully, sometimes harmoniously in a mass composition and sometimes as dramatic focal points, showing off their attributes in contrast to neighboring plants, all depending on the needs of space and the inspiration of the, dare I say, Lila Shakti, expressed through the gardener's heart. In expressing all this, I realize that to a middle-class American audience, this poeticism may be repulsive. I appreciate, therefore, the practical value of a less florid presentation, but I just couldn't keep my mutated middle-class American self from saying something. Am I fair or foul, Madame Mohandas? And this is my quick reply, because I just basically, I said, Jai, I like it. It brings up the problem with communication and analogies. If I say to a beautiful lady, your face is like the moon, am I complimenting her or insulting her? Am I saying her face is bright or her face is comically spherical? So in the same way, what are we saying by that analogy of the grass? In the next Sangha, I will read what you wrote and try to discuss it. Yes, I have to make that analogy more precise, and you as a listener may have to try harder to see the compliment in it. A quick reply, but I need to think more. Thanks for the thoughtfulness. So I really want to get into the CC, but if you just look at, obviously, the point that I appreciate is what exactly does that analogy refer to? And my point was is that obviously analogies are meant to refer to specific aspects. And so what is the homogeneity and the non-distinction? It's the homogeneity and non-distinction of the ego. Well, so if you take the example of kirtan, the blade of grass analogy would be, it would refer to the ego and not necessarily the distinction. It would be the way one actually utilizes his distinction. He utilizes his distinction, not in the sense of ahankara, that I am the controller and I am the enjoyer, but he uses the distinction in service, and therefore the homogeneity is the feeling of the devotee, the feeling and the mood of the devotee, that I am not the controller, I am not the enjoyer, I am not the center, which is what in a general term and in an egoistic sense, distinction can be used. It's really a question of the false ego. and how one uses his attributes and distinctions. And that type of analogy says, be very, very careful to not use the distinctions if you want to advance and especially progress to advanced stages in Krishna consciousness. Do not take it to invoke a sense of independence or non-dependence on Krishna. So if you look at the kirtan, the analogy again, how would a devotee chant like he's more humble than a blade of grass, even though one person's the madanga player and another person is another type of madanga player and one person is the cartels and one person is the dancer, etc. Well, it's in the mood of I am a servant equal to every other servant before God. And you can see what one should not do. And that's try to use his abilities and talents specifically in kirtan to make himself the center. Some acrobatics with the madanga, the splits on the floor. But, not in the service of the kirtan, but in the service of one's ego. Or whatever it is, dancing, etc. And I had a realization about this, that when I myself play harmonium, I'm not even a very good musician, and I have a madanga player accompanying me. The expertise of the madanga player is I can see sometimes that some people are very expert, but they're not in service of the kirtan. And they don't actually enhance the kirtan. When you have someone who's actually the most expert, not just in talented, but in the sense of kirtan and music, his consciousness is how I can serve the kirtan and not how I can become an individual maestro. And I've seen that. And sometimes someone who's not a very, very expert kirtanier, but he's very, very humble and he's in the mood of service of the kirtan, I can see that sometimes that helps me more in my kirtan than someone who's a virtuoso, a so-called virtuoso. So this is it's just a point for thought, and I like when people write me or make comments, et cetera. But it certainly also shows, and I made this point before, how it's so natural to process information according to our experience. And if someone grows up in a spiritual society where, in an immature sense, these type of analogies and humility, et cetera, is overextended to squelch people's individuality, their own individual expressions in the service of Krishna, then naturally, when one speaks analogies like this, they won't be understood very clearly, or there'll be a tendency to process it according to one's experience. Anyway, I'm not going to go any further for that. I want to go on now to the CC. And there's one other realization I had too about this class. It's a work in progress, one thing I really want to do is I want to go forward on it. To me, it's going too slow. I really want to go forward. I have a tendency to review again and again because I want to put things in context. So I'm going to try not to go all the way back. But this wonderful section, we're seeing the mood of Krishna Das Kaviraj, and we're specifically seeing, and it's such a wonderful lesson, his quality of gratitude or indebtedness. And therefore, before he begins on this task, he's giving credit to the predecessors in the parampara, starting with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Even he was glorifying the three presiding deities in Vrindavan, specifically glorifying Vrindavan Das Thakur, who is the initial biographer of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. In that mood, he's only taking his remnants, and with great devotion, putting Vrindavan Das Thakur's feet on his head, he's going to proceed, and he naturally, where he's feeling that he's indebted to the six Goswamis, who actually made this knowledge by their realization accessible Nana Shastra Vicharanika Nipanosa Dharma, going through all the scriptures to take out the essence of the scriptures, which is bhakti, so Dharma, establishing it for the welfare of all. So you can see as he's glorifying these Vaishnavas and thinking of their accomplishments, it's putting him more and more in the mood of serving. And more one's in the mood of serving, the more one in a humble way can experience the Lord's mercy. So I was just thinking of this quality, gratitude, and more what I'm seeing is that our goal is our eternal relationship with Krishna. But that goal is based on, first thing, taking the mood of servant, humble servant, which is a very humble mood, and how that humility is expressed in, in different characteristics, and one is gratitude. Even I had this concept, I was having a discussion, how do we actually develop our eternal relationship with Krishna? And really, there was a term in one purport of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, it said, Bhagavat Seva Rupini, that our eternal relationship with Krishna is the form of service there. Actually, if we want to develop an eternal relationship with Krishna, we have to develop the service mood, intensify the service mood. And when that service mood to Krishna is all-consuming in our consciousness, which means the spirit of priti or love is flowing from our heart, the form of that is our sarup, our eternal form and relationship to Krishna. It actually comes out from the heart. So we can see how, for example, gratitude is so important. Because what is gratitude? Gratitude means we are appreciative for what we get. And you can see if one is very, and if you're appreciative of what you get, then you will very much experience the love and mercy from others, and your heart will change with love. It's very, very important. So you can see that someone who has a mood of pride, who has a hunkar in the control, and thinks he's so deserving, you can think of a spoiled child, no matter what, there's no gratitude. So no matter what the parents do for him, it's never enough. So he never feels the love, he never feels, therefore, the love of his parents. And therefore, because he never is feeling the love of his parents, he's never feeling love for his parents in his heart. And that's the nature of the conditioned soul. Because we grow up with pride, then we're never appreciative for what we get. And therefore, we're not experiencing Krishna's love, even though it's pouring down on us. And therefore, we're not developing love for Krishna. And even Krishna himself, because this is the nature of a person that he reciprocates. And when one reciprocates more than, when one starts to give more than he receives, how do I put this in a way? I'll put it in another way, this in terms of this gratitude. When one is actually getting, whatever he's getting, he's feeling so much gratitude. I was just thinking it's actually one of the qualities of Krishna. Why? Because it's the nature, the greatness of a person is his ability to reciprocate love. And when one reciprocates more than he receives, it indicates the exalted nature of his personality. Because he's giving. A great person, he recognizes debt. And one who is not, he has a lack of appreciation for his blessing. So you can see, although it's called gratitude, it's the same thing as compassion. It's the same thing as humility. It's the same thing as sincerity. It's the same thing as bhakti. And we think, if we look at Krishna as the supreme person, how does he reciprocate? Patam pushpam palam toyam yome bhakta prayachati. Even if he receives a leaf, a flower, or water with love, he accepts it so little. And we see the example of Putana, where she came to kill Krishna with deadly poison on her breast, but because she came as a mother, Krishna accepted her service and gave her the same destination as her mother. This is one of the verses that Sukadeva Goswami heard when he left the womb of his mother after 14 years. And Vyasadeva, in separation from his son, sent his students to go find Sukadeva Goswami. And when they were looking for him, they were revising their verses. And there was four verses that just allured Sukadeva Goswami to hear the Bhagavatam, which is the story of this great personality, Krishna. And one was, Aho Bhakiyam Kulakutasthana. Oh, how wonderful Krishna is. That even though she came to kill him with deadly poison on her breast, he accepted her as her mother, and she received the same destination. Or the example of Krishna's gratefulness mentioned in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Krishna said to Draupadi was being disrobed. And finally, she saw she couldn't resist the powerful Kuru, so she threw both hands in the air and just said, Hey, Govinda. And later, Krishna said to her, he said, Because you have chanted my name once, I am eternally indebted to you. So this is Krishna Das Kaviraj, the Vaishnava, expressing his heart and also preparing himself for a great task. When you prepare yourself for a great task where you will have to accomplish something significant, and that is your service to do so, you want to be very, very careful that your accomplishments and your efforts are not subverted or captured simply for the false ego. It's not simply for the false ego. So the humble soul, he's always thinking in service, he's thinking of his relationship with Krishna, and therefore he's preparing himself. And now in this indebtedness and this remembrance of the great souls, he's specifically remembering their literary contributions. And what do we think of Prabhupada? Really, so many things, but remember his literary contribution. So he begins to mention all the wonderful books. First of Srila Rupa Goswami, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, a complete analysis of devotional service. And then as a commentary, basically, because Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu describes in the southern division, it describes in those five waves, it describes the five emotional components of perfect love. Then in the Western Division, which also has five waves, it describes each of the five primary relationships with Krishna and how they're composed of these five emotional components. And then, obviously, it describes Shantaras in the first wave and of the Western Division. The second wave, it describes Dasyaras. The third wave, Sakyaras. The fourth wave, Parental Ras. And the fifth wave, conjugal ras. But when he describes the conjugal ras and the five emotional components that comprise the perfect conjugal ras, he does it briefly. And then later, he writes a whole book simply on that. What are the five emotional components that make perfect spiritual conjugal love? That's called the Ujjvala Nilamani. So these are just some of the wonderful books, and there's Laghu Bhagavatamrita, where he describes in depth the different expansions of Krishna. Padyavali, which is a compendium of great Vaishnav verses and poems. And Nataka Varnana, a description of poetics and then specific dramas. Lalita Madhava, Vidugdha Madhava, where the spirit of Bhakti Ras is, he composes wonderful, perfect dramas according to classic poetics on Krishna's Leela. And before that, he was glorifying, and you can just say, when you actually Rupa Raghunatha Pade Hoy Ibe Akute Bujetbo say Yugala Pariti, Narottam Das Thakur is praying, when I develop eagerness Hoy Ibe Akute Kabe Habe Bujetbo say Yugala, then I will understand Radha and Krishna. So when you start to read these books And see the effect that they have on your life, you become so indebted to those who have given these books. So he's obviously Krishna Das Kaviraj. He's read all these books, and when you say Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, the masterpiece, the Dugdha Madhava, the Lalita Madhava, Padyavali, and then he's thinking, and you can see how his heart is absolutely melting in utter appreciation. He's feeling so much mercy for Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda, who have arisen on the horizon of Gaudiya like the sun and the moon simultaneously. He's feeling, and then he's thinking before that, even Sanatan Goswami, we had Bhagavatamrita, which by the mercy of Gopi Pramodana Prabhu and Jayadvaita Maharaj and Keshav Bharti Goswami, we have that book, and the Dasama Tipani, Dasama, his commentaries on the 10th canto, the Hari Bhakti Vilas, outlining all the different etiquettes and practical behavior of the Vaishnava, which was one of the missions that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave him, including establishing the various deities and excavating Vrindavan. And now, he's going to talk about Jiva Goswami, who he says, Kaila Pada Anta Nai. There is no end to the Bhakti Granth, the books on devotional service he has composed. I am personally so indebted to Srila Jiva Goswami that every day in my own personal spiritual practices, in my mind, I go to the courtyard of Radha Damodar and I sit at his samadhi and I chant Nana Shastra Vachara Naika Nipano Siddharma Samstapako Lokanam Hitakarano Tribhuvane. So many shastras that they've composed. I think in one of the purports, Prabhupada mentioned that he composed 400,000 verses. You can imagine what that is. The Bhagavatam is 18,000 verses. That's 20 times the Bhagavatam is the composition of Jiva Goswami. Maybe I got that wrong, but I'll have to look it up. But here it says you can't count them, and certainly 400,000 you practically can't count. So he's glorifying him, and then he says, Sri Bhagavata Sandarbha Nam Granthi Vistar Bhakti Siddhantara Tate Deha Yachena Par. In Sri Bhagavat Sandarbha, Srila Jiva Goswami has written conclusively about the ultimate aim of devotional service. It says, Vistar, very elaborately, Bhakti Siddhant, the conclusions. So there's a whole summary. I think in those of you who want to be more studious, you can read the purports yourselves. But basically, there's three categories of at least Vaishnava philosophy, but philosophy in general. Generally, there's a metaphysics, a conception of reality. There's a that's called Sambandhagyan, which also includes what's called epistemology, your pramana or your means of knowing. So so that's called Sambandhagyan. It's basically metaphysics and epistemology, a description of existence and your method by which you will give evidence for what you're going to present. And then there's Abhideyagyan. Then what is your method of realizing reality? And finally, Priyojana, what is your goal? And your goal is the experience of reality. And for the Vaishnava, what is that experience of reality? When he becomes free from ignorance, he begins to see God. And he sees himself in relationship to God, and therefore experiences the love between himself and God, which is the prema pumartha mahan. That's our goal. To actually be free from ignorance, experience God, experience our relationship with God, and feel it. And that's the ultimate reality, because in the ultimate reality, rasa vaisaha, there's Krishna and Krishna's energies and the exchange between them. So the ultimate reality, when one becomes free from illusion, is a relationship between Krishna and Krishna's energies, which is love or prema. And that ultimate description of reality is described in the 10th canto. So Jiva Goswami wrote four books on or sandarbhas or essays comprehensively establishing the epistemology and metaphysics of Krishna consciousness, which is Krishna and Krishna's energy. He wrote the Tattva Sandarbha, which is about epistemology, pramana, our method of knowing, and he establishes that our method of knowing, or the topmost method of knowing, is the Shabda Brahman represented, the spiritual sound, the spirit reality represented in sound, which is best expressed in terms of the Bhagavatam. Then there is the Bhagavat Sandarbha. Then there's the Paramatma Sandarbha, which describes how God interacts with this world. And the Krishna Sandarbha, which establishes Krishna as Swayam Bhagavan. That's Sambandhagyan. The fifth Sandarbha is Bhakti Sandarbha, which describes the method of knowing that absolute reality, which is devotion. And all, it's so elaborate. It describes non-tattva, the truth about the holy name, guru tattva, so many different, that raganuga bhakti, everything. And finally, the last essay is called Priti Sandarbha, a thesis on love. What is the goal is this priti, which he describes as three things mixed together. Priti, the desire to please Krishna, the desire to be with Krishna, therefore to render service, mixed with the happiness of doing so. So this is the contribution. But then he goes on to explain further, Gopala Champu Name Granta Mahasur Nitya Lila Stapana Yahi Rajarasapur. He said, very interesting, the most famous and formidable transcendental literature is the book named Gopal Champu. In this book, the eternal pastimes of the Lord are established, and the transcendental mellows enjoyed in Vrindavan are completely described. So this is Jiva Goswami's commentary and elaboration on all the pastimes of Krishna. But it also includes in that description other subjects also. Besides his commentary, for example, the residence of Radha and Madhava, decorating Radharani and Krishna, the meeting of Srimati Radharani and Krishna. So these are explained. So that's Gopal. And Champu means it's a special literary genre that mixes poetry and prose together. So this is considered his most famous work, which is yet to be translated in English, or it has been translated in English by Kushikrata Prabhu, who has recently passed away. It's waiting to be published. And we'll go on. We'll finish. A mata nana granta koriya pakas goshti shahate kaila vrindavana vas. Thus, Srila Rupa Goswami, Sanatan Goswami, and their nephew, Srila Jiva Goswami, as well as practically all of their family members, lived in Vrindavan and published important books on devotional service to establish the philosophical basis of Krishna consciousness. Because to undertake any endeavor, you need faith. Because any endeavor takes some austerity to complete it into perfection. And no one will undergo any austerity unless he has faith in what he's doing. So to undertake Krishna consciousness with determination, we need faith. And at faith that it's true. And what's our faith that it's true? It's Shastriya Shraddha. It's faith in the Shastra. It's faith that this is actually the conclusion of the Vedas. And for us, it's coming in Guru Parampara, Prabhupada said, etc. But, and with that faith, and faith is not just I believe or I don't believe. It's a whole gradation of conviction. Based on our that's why in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, when Rupa Goswami describes what is the qualification for taking Kavaiti Bhakti, and he says there's a Kanishtha Adhikari, a beginning qualification, a Madhyam Adhikari, a middle qualification, and the Uttama Adhikari, he has the topmost qualification. So what is the topmost qualification for practicing Krishna consciousness? He says it's your knowledge and your faith that you actually understand that this is coming from the Shastras. And you have faith in it because by the application of what is in the Shastra, you develop, you not only have a theoretical sense of truth, but you actually begin to experience it's true. And what do you experience? You're experiencing bhakti. You experience devotion for Krishna, and you develop a taste for it. And that's that whole verse where Rupa Goswami, how much we're indebted to Srila Rupa Goswami, he is categorized and defined all the different aspects of devotional service, including the stages that one goes through. With that verse, Adau Shraddha Tathadu Sangha Bhajana Kriya. It all begins with Shraddha, or faith. And what is that faith? Faith is an appreciation for serving Krishna, that this is a good thing. But more than just appreciation that this is a good thing, it's the experience you have that it's a good thing. And when that experience that you have that it's a good thing increases, then your faith increases, your bhakti increases. It's the same. Our taste, our bhakti, our faith, it's the same thing. And as that faith increases, which means the taste increases for bhakti, and the trust that this is actually, Prabhupada said, faith means to trust in something sublime, then you come to the stage of sadhu sangha. You begin to associate with devotees. And if you associate with devotees, and those devotees are fixed in Krishna consciousness in a way where you can identify with them and also benefit from that association, then your experience of Krishna consciousness will increase to the extent your trust that this is so good that you'll begin to adopt the practices that actually bring this devotion into your heart. And then by adopting those practices and experiencing beginning to experience to some degree the sublimity of Krishna consciousness, then you'll come to the next stage of faith, which is called anartana vritti. This is so good that I will give up those things that are not connected to it. Sadhu Sangha is so important, but they published all these literatures to increase our faith and to establish the correct principles, increase our faith in devotional service, and give us the knowledge of how to execute it. So he's experiencing that. Krishna Das Kaviraj, and now with his head bowed down in a very, very humble way, his heart filled with so much love by just thinking in gratitude of the mercy he received from Krishna through his devotees and the books that they have produced. Now he will begin to try to serve that line of teachings by expanding it with his own teachings and writing books, and then he begins now the Madhya or the Seisha Lila And he begins, Pratame Vatsare Advaitari Bhaktagan Pabore Dekhite Koila Niladriga. The first year after Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu accepted the renounced order of life, all the devotees headed by Sri Advaita went to see the Lord at Jagannath Puri. So the Seisha Lila, the end pastimes, the last 24 years, is after he took sannyas, and he traveled in South India, and then he winds up in Puri to fulfill the internal reason of his descent. And now he's going to describe how the devotees, headed by Advaita, came there and enjoyed the Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, chanting and hearing about Krishna, and how that meeting became so intense that neither Lord Chaitanya or his devotees could become satisfied without that experience. Because that experience of pure sadhu sangha between the Lord and his devotees and between each other is fulfilling the deepest inner desire in the heart, which is to experience satisfaction and love. So, therefore, they would meet every year. And now I finished the introduction, and hopefully, I'm looking forward to now going over the verses of Gaur Lila and trying in a humble way to discuss them. Are there any questions by anybody? Would like to ask any questions? If anybody would like to say Hare Krishna, sometimes we get a sense of who's visiting or there. Would anybody like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Bol Maharaj, Charachandra from Wildwood, New Jersey.
Charachandra, I just met you in Mayapur, wasn't it?
Yep.
Very nice. Thank you. Is this your first time on the Sangha?
I was on last week with Chaitanya Dayo. She was up here.
Oh, Chaitanya Daya. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you. Nice that you could join. It's nice, new people coming. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Badri and Ananda.
Oh, Badri. Ananda, very nice. The people that I've met in India, they attended our tour. Everyone's okay?
Yeah, everyone.
Thank you. Good. Hare Krishna. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, this is Bharati.
Oh, Bharati from Edison. I'll see you this afternoon. Thank you. Okay.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
I just
want to express my appreciation for one thing, you're having reread Madame Mohan's letter.
Yeah.
I was so impressed by his poetic rendering of what humility is, you know. And I wanted to hear it again, and I was so happy that you read it again. And on top of it, you know, this time I really appreciated the realization that I got from your explanation of, the humility of a servant versus a person with false ego. That a person, and how you reconcile the fact that we have individuality with the fact that we also blend in, you know, that we use our individuality to enhance the whole, whereas a person with false ego wants to use his individuality to stand out from the whole rather than to enhance it, you know.
It's interesting, huh? That's it's nice that you expressed that clearly. Yeah, the person who's the humble wants to use his individuality to enhance the whole, and someone who's not humble, he uses his individuality to promote his own position.
Yeah,
I should also mention again,
to stand out from the whole rather than to enhance it. You know?
That's wonderful. That's very nice how you actually even made that clearer. And it's interesting too. These type of points, we can relish together, you know, philosophical discussion, you know, not even in an intellectual, you know, way, but we can actually think actually what these points mean, and we can see when in Sadhu Sangha, when we make these things more distinct, then we can apply the philosophy of Krishna consciousness more efficaciously to our own life. And I think that's really what Prabhupada said, that we should get together and read and study the scriptures from different angles, because specifically he wanted us to have a clear understanding of the absolute truth without prejudice. And I'll mention one other thing. Another example that was given, which is also very interesting, is someone said that it's like shapes of metal that you put in fire. They become one. You know, they become fire. You know, they all have the same amount of heat and light, but the shape is different. So it's very interesting, the simultaneously oneness and difference. But I like the way I try to understand the point deeply, and I think you helped us to go even explain it more clearly. Thank you so much. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? It's nice, this discussion.
I'll say Hare Krishna. This is Chaitanya Daya, actually.
Nice to hear from you again.
Yes.
Are you still keeping that mood from Vrindavan?
As much as I can.
Okay, good.
It can be a little difficult, you know.
I will be going out and to California in the first and second week of May.
Oh, that's wonderful. But,
What?
Have you contacted him?
Yeah. No, okay. I have the whole thing set up from the 11th to 15th.
Okay.
And I'll be with Giriraj Swami before, then it's all set up.
Oh, that's wonderful.
And I'll be contacting you to fulfill your promise about that.
All right, no problem. He just came out with a new book, you know.
Okay, good. Very nice. I'll be happy to read it. Thank you, Chaitanya Daya. This is nice. Anybody else like to say Hare Krishna? Okay, then we'll finish. It's good. Thank you very much, everyone. Vansha Kalpa Tarubya Shah, Kripa Sindhu Vedra Shah, Patitanam Bhavane Vyomaitan Vedra.